go to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Filling in for AME President Dan Levler, here's your host, AME's Chief of Staff, Ryan McGarry.
All right, good morning to our listeners, and welcome to another episode of Suffolk Matters. I'm AME Chief of Staff, Ryan McGarry, filling in for President Dan Levler today. And joining us in the studio is John Hampson. John Hampson, a high school teacher, a NYSET union member, but also known to many as the lead singer of 9 Days and writer of Absolutely, Story of a Girl. John, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. We're very excited to have you on Suffolk Matters. We're also very excited to have you coming up next month in May as one of the headliners for May 13th's May Day Music Festival at Bald Hill Amphitheater. You're joining an impressive lineup of the Wallflowers, Blues Travelers, Wheatus, yourself. It's going to be a ton of fun. So we really do thank you for coming in today, John. Thank you.
Sure.
Obviously, we want to talk about the festival. We want to talk about your history with 9 Days. We want to talk about your unionism and your fact that you're a member in NYSET now that you're a teacher at Wantagh High School. But before we get into all that, do you mind if we go back in time about 20 years and talk a little bit about the career of 9 Days?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, excellent. So you formed back in the 90s, here on Long Island.
Yep, 95-ish, 94, 95. Long time ago. Let's keep it there.
Well, please don't say it was that long ago because I still remember those years fondly and well, like they were yesterday. But when you were forming, what got you into it? What got you into songwriting and wanting to pursue that career?
It's just one of those things. I always wanted to do it. From the time I was a little kid, I just always loved music. I was always interested in the creation of music. I remember just being a little kid and just being fascinated by songs. And I remember being in third grade. I tell this story, but I remember being in third grade on the bus and writing my first song, which was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I didn't realize it was one person. I thought it was like two, you know, whatever. But I remember writing that song. I could still sing it, but I won't. So pretty much, it's all I ever really wanted to do was music. I don't really know a time that I didn't have some fascination with music. So it's always been there.
No, fantastic. And obviously, as an English teacher, you have those literary influences as well. So even third grade, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, what? Give me something there.
It's got to be. I mean, it's not really a surprise I got into teaching English. People say, oh, they assume I teach music. Which makes sense, but I have no interest in music theory. It's math. I'm not a math guy. So, there's definitely a correlation with songwriting and, you know, writing lyrics and poetry and kind of my interest in literature and reading. It's all connected.
No, fantastic. And for those who haven't seen it, an amazing piece just came out recently, Newsday, on things you've been up to, your teaching career, and, of course, your career with 9 Days. And I love the picture they used of you standing in your classroom right in front of a slide of Hemingway's omission theory or iceberg theory.
Yeah.
So to kind of apply that to yourself, what was laying behind the surface at those early formation years that were inspiring you, that was motivating you, that maybe we in the audience didn't get to see but knew that was there?
That's a great segue, by the way.
Well, thank you, sir.
I'm going to use that in my classroom. It's like you'd need like a whole, you know, 4-hour biography to get into it. But you mean as far as getting into teaching or just songwriting in general or music?
Yeah, what was kind of the influence or motivating factors lying underneath the surface when that was motivating your songwriting that maybe as a listener or a fan we didn't really see but we could feel?
All right. That's a great question. I think most artists, most songwriters, you start off by emulating other songs, other songwriters, you know, and it could be, I mean, all across the board, it could be, you know, Toto from Rosanna, you know, 1981 or whatever. Like, I just love the radio, and it could be Kiss, you know, Rock and Roll All Night. It's just you find something that you like and you want to figure out how did this work? What made that song work? And you use it as a blueprint. And that's when you're first starting as a writer. And for me, I'm like a teenager, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old and sitting in my classes and just writing songs in my notebooks. But what really kind of got me over the hump and I think to be like a songwriter was Bob Dylan. And I don't think anybody's going to listen to my music and say, oh, he's clearly influenced by Bob Dylan. But I had this moment. I was about 19 years old, and I had pulled out Bob Dylan's Greatest Hits, a vinyl record out of my mom's collection. And I just put it on, just to listen, background music. And every song that came on, I was like, I know this song. And it just struck me how his songs still were powerful and resonated, and how important the lyrics were. And that just hit me in a way that I hadn't really felt before as a songwriter. I started thinking more in terms of, okay, anything I write, if I can't pick up an acoustic guitar and play it and have it resonate, then it's not really a song. And that was a huge change. Because up until that point, you know, I'm a teenager, I got my big, you know, the electric guitar and the loud amps, and a lot of it was that volume that was so exciting. And this made me sort of scale it down and pay more attention to lyrics and melody and structure. So probably Bob Dylan would be the biggest influence that I doubt anybody catches in my music.
Except for a song all about Bobby's in the basement.
that was my partner's song. But yeah, we were both huge into Dylan and Neil Young. That was the big influences.
No, absolutely. And obviously, the well is so deep when it comes to Dylan. But was there a defining song or one song in particular that really got you and made you start thinking that way?
Girl from the North Country.
Ah, beautiful.
Freewheeling Bob Dylan. That was the one. I was like, this just hit me big time. And it's funny, as I'm thinking this, and you'll probably make the connection, but we've got Jacob Dylan, right?
Yeah.
Playing on the Mayfest. So there's a connection there.
No, absolutely. I mean, without a doubt, we are extremely excited to have a Dylan coming to the May Day Music Festival on May 13th. You know, the whole genesis of the festival is really to bring attention to the labor movement. And obviously, he's carried on that tradition of his father to really capture the voice of working men and women in America. And that's what we want to do with this festival, and also give back to our community by raising money for local scholarship programs, and also for the ability to put food on our neighbor's table by supporting Long Island Cares. But going back to 9 days, and it took 4 albums before your big breakthrough hit. It was on your 4th album, right? That Absolutely
yeah.
Story of a Girl
yep.
came out. And that was a top 10 hit. So what was that breakthrough experience like after doing 3 albums first and then finally hitting it big?
Well, we did 3 albums on our own. They're sort of our indie records. And it was always the plan, if you want to call it a plan, was just to record our music. You know, we were songwriters, and I didn't want to wait around for a record label to come in and give us the opportunity to make an album or a record. Back in the 90s, that's what you did. You chased a deal. And I was 22 at the time, but I had already been at it for since I was 18, like just hardcore, just making music, and that was my whole life. So even after just 4 years, I just decided I'm not going to wait anymore. Let's just make our own records. So each record we did was kind of, you know, was part of our process. It was a benchmark. It was a way for us to measure ourselves as a band and songwriters. And it got us further and further up the ladder. And we reached a point where we had showcased for, I really think, probably every major label. And they would come to our shows in the city, we'd be packed out, and then the next day I'd be waiting for my manager to call me, you know, who is into it? Who you know, is anybody, you know, offering, you know, a major label deal? And no one did. But the word was always, we really love your band, but we're not sure exactly what to do with it. You know, like they were all looking for the radio hit, and we were not a radio band. It just wasn't what we did. But it really is a fluke. Story of a Girl just came to me in a moment of inspiration, and I wrote that song. And as soon as that wave of inspiration was over, about a half hour later, when I started the song and kind of mostly had finished it, I just knew. I was like, there's something happened here. And we got into the studio shortly after that. We demoed the song, and like right out of the movies, all of a sudden, everybody's like, okay, now we know what to do with your band. And we had a lot of offers, and it was an amazing ride and experience. On one hand, it was like you see in the movies. On the other hand, it was, we made this record. We came home from making the album, and I went back to living in my old bedroom for a couple months because I didn't have an apartment anymore or anything. And I saw the debut of Story of a Girl on MTV and this tiny little TV in my old teenage bedroom. And I remember feeling, this is extremely anticlimactic. Like, this is the moment I've been waiting for. Like, it was weird. So it was a wonderful, crazy, completely surreal experience.
So not that thrill that you might imagine when seeing yourself on TV.
No. And it was weird because, you know, I grew up MTV generation, right? And you see in the bottom left-hand corner the band name, just the text. That's all it was. But to see that on the TV, I was like, oh, my God, we're on MTV. And then as elated as that moment was, then it was over and the next video came on and it was... It's like, well, that was it.
That was it.
There we go. I've been waiting my whole life for that, and it's over now. I guess I'm going to go to 7-Eleven. I don't know what you do, you know? So it was weird.
No, that's great. I mean, I remember when that video came out, and I remember it fondly. I was watching MTV, and I'd watch it on loop, hoping to catch that video over and over and over again. It was a great song. It was a fun video, too.
Yeah, it was fun, yeah.
And, you know, fast forward, you got the girl. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Not the girl in the video, though.
That's okay.
Everyone asked my wife, is that you in the video? She's like, no, that's not me.
But tell us about your wife and how that came to be. If you wouldn't mind.
Yeah. So I started dating my wife. That's such a weird thing to say. But we were young. She was 22. I was 24. And I've told this story often. But, you know, we started dating. She was the first girl that sat me down and literally sat me down and was like, listen, I'm not here to just kind of date. Like, I'm basically, essentially, it's like, when are you putting a ring on my finger? And I was 24. I'm a musician. I have nothing. You know, I'm just trying to make it. And I just was thinking, oh my God, like, I am not ready for this conversation. And that was sort of the driving force of writing Story of a Girl. You know, she just would get frustrated. You know, a friend of hers would be dating some guy for, you know, 6 months, and we'd been dating for a year, and there would be a proposal. And she'd be like, well, what are you waiting for? So there was one of those moments, literally, where somebody she knew had gotten engaged. I was playing a club out in Island Park. It was a Memorial Day weekend, outdoor show, big giant deck. And she got annoyed, and she, like, walked away across this giant deck. I don't remember the name of the venue, but and I was literally sitting there thinking just how frustrated I was. And as I'm thinking that, across the room I see her laughing with a couple of her girlfriends, and I thought to myself, as cheesy as this sounds, I absolutely love her when she smiles. The song just happened. It just started coming out of the air. I just was, you know, singing it, the first line, this is the story of a girl. That's the first thing that happened. And I wrote the song. We went on this crazy thrill ride of having a hit, which, by the way, it actually went to number one. I want to point that out.
It
was number one on Billboard. Top 10. Listen, that's top 10. It made it to six on the Hot 100 and number one on Billboard's Top 40. But then, so, you know, in the midst of all this craziness happening, we did get engaged finally, and we married 2001. So, yeah, I am married to the story of a girl.
That's beautiful. And you work together, too.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
So did she help inspire you to pursue the teaching career? And
yeah. Well, so going back again to being a teenager in high school, I had this I always loved my English classes. I was always a big reader. I loved my English classes. That was my favorite subject. And I had this teacher in my senior year. His name was Mr. Kozira. So if he's out there, shout out to Mr. Kozira. And I had this class called College Reading, College Prep. And he was just such a fantastic, he was so animated. And he made everything, you know, we were digging into literature in a way that I had never done in a class. And I loved it. And I just remember thinking as a high school senior, just like, well, okay, if I don't make it as a rock star, I want to do what he does. So when my wife and I started to, you know, planned a family, let's start a family. She was already teaching Italian. And I just, it's a longer story, but I basically just had that epiphany of like, what am I doing here with music? You never know where you're going to be in 6 months, a year. My wife was pregnant. I just didn't want to kind of be the absentee dad. And so I went back to school and really never looked back. I've been very happy and blessed to have had the opportunity to have music be the central thing in my life for so long, and then get to do a whole other career, have a whole other career of something that I love, which is teaching.
No,
so
and that's
worked
fantastic.
Out.
And I love personally, if you don't mind me throwing around where you got your education from, the fact that you studied at Suffolk Community College and then Stony Brook. So we at AME, we represent the civilian workforce or the non-faculty workforce over at the community college, and obviously our brothers and sisters in labor with the Faculty Association, part of NYSET, are the instructors. And then similarly over at SUNY Stony Brook, you have unionized teachers there as well providing that education. So love to see this Long Island boy makes it big and then returns to his roots and gets an education right here on Long Island by quality unionized Long Island workers, and then goes and provides that same service to now almost 20 years worth of students yourself.
Yeah, almost.
Going back to that teacher that inspired you and the literature that inspired you, was there any, are there any literary figures or authors? I know Bob Dylan on the music side, but in terms of textual side, is there any author that really spoke to you or any work that really spoke to you, both that influenced your teaching or your writing?
God, there's so many. I had great professors in all, you know, I also went to St. Joe's and Patchogue as well. I had great professors introduce me to a lot of great poetry and novels. Cormac McCarthy was an author that I was first kind of exposed to at Suffolk. And I loved him. He's probably my favorite novelist. But it's a collective, it's a collection of all different works that have inspired me as a teacher and just even as a writer. And the list is so long, I couldn't even begin to get in there. But the classics, right? Gatsby, Moby Dick was a novel that I got to tackle for my thesis. And that was a huge influence on both teaching and how novels are constructed, and even as a writer, what Melville did. So there's just so many different works of literature, to get all sort of academic about it, that had a profound impact on me as a writer and a teacher. I couldn't list them all.
No, hard to list them all, right? For our listeners this morning, Ryan McGarry, Chief of Staff for AME, filling in for President Leveler. We're joined today by John Hampson of 9 Days, also a NYSET member, Wantagh High School English teacher. We're talking about some of his literary influences right now. And just to follow up on that kind of conversation, John, moving away from yourself and looking at your students, are there works that you see that this new generation of students is really responding to, either from contemporary times or a classic that's kind of transcending the changes?
So that's a great question. It's something we grapple with all the time as teachers with curriculum. You know, the whole thing about the dead white male authors, right? That's the predominantly the text that we read. But we're still reading a lot of the classics, whether it's Catcher in the Rye, which always resonates with my 11th graders, who are currently reading that right now. Holden is a polarizing character, but it's a great way to get in to take a look at him as, you know, would he be canceled? How quickly would he be canceled today? We've introduced some newer texts into the curriculum, but it's still the classics. Like, I love reading Romeo and Juliet with my freshman class, but I always start off by doing this like fun little class where I ask them if they feel like this is modern English, middle English, or old English. And of course, they all say old English. And then I play them, you know, a 30-second audio clip of old English, which nobody would understand a single word of it. And then I play some Chaucer in middle English, and they're like, well, maybe I get a couple words out of that. And then they realize, wait a minute, Shakespeare is modern English. And we talk about how words change, right? There are words that are used now with we'll call them kids, right? That 20 years from now, no one will know what they even mean. Or if they do, it'll be like groovy is to us, right? It's a word that we know, but we don't use. So I love just kind of using language as getting past that barrier of language. And I don't understand this. I don't understand Shakespeare or something. So it's really, you use the works that we read in the class just to get ideas across and convey connections to the world now. And that always works. The classics work for that.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And just moving from being a teacher, and also I keep referencing it, but we haven't talked about it yet, you're also a union member, and just curious your perspective and that of your fellow teachers What does it mean to be part of a union and to have that representation when you need it and to have an organization that's going to be fighting and advocating for both your benefits and your compensation?
It's a wonderful sense of security. When you know, as a teacher, usually it's probably every 3 to 4 years you renew the contract. So I've been there 15 years now, going on 16. So I've been through a number of contracts and that battle, you know, those conversations that happen between administration and our union reps and, you know, just trying to, have a fair contract as teachers. And the teacher right now, I'm not sure the public opinion of it, you know, like there's tenure is a big thing that comes up. There are people that are opposed to tenure. And I feel like that there's a double-edged sword to that people don't really understand, because tenure also keeps your teachers in your district. It's not fair market where, oh, we love this teacher's English teacher's fantastic. So a district that may have more money can hire them away. It doesn't work that way. So you keep your good teachers in your district. So the union is critical to allowing us to do our jobs without having to fear every day that, we're going to lose that job or have certain basic, I don't want to call them rights, but the way that we teach taken away from us. So it's a great security.
No, absolutely. And a security that maybe you don't have as a musician or a rock star.
There's no security with music.
No, that's fantastic. And John, I'm very excited for you. Obviously, I'm excited for myself to be getting to interview you right now, but very excited for you because we're fast forwarding 20 years after your hit, or just over 20 years, and it seems to be being born again. Mm-hmm. You have it prominently featured in the Academy Award winning film, Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's in the Harrison Ford led drama on Apple TV, Shrinking, mm-hmm. Almost a scene stealing scene is your song, right?
Yeah.
So what does it mean to you and also to your students and your family to kind of see this whole new light being shined on a career that you may have felt you left behind a little bit?
Of course it's wonderful. The interesting thing is the song has maintained a certain profile that I never would have imagined 25 years ago when I wrote it. To think that I'm still sitting here talking about it, I would not have imagined that. But it's been used in TV and films before, but this past, really, it's like the last year to a year and a half, it really does seem to have kind of entered the zeitgeist again in a way that it hasn't. And Everything Everywhere All at Once, that film, is one of the best sort of, or the most exciting things that has happened for me in terms of music in my whole life. I'm a huge film fan. And when the directors reached out to me, it was 2 years ago, to use the song, if you haven't seen the film, the song is actually in the film three times, but it's three different versions. And when they first asked me, they were like, well, we're going to change up some of the words. We want sort of these iterations of it. But it wasn't clear who was going to create those. So for a few weeks, I'd have my publisher, hey, can you ask him again? I'd really love to be involved on the creative side of this. And eventually they said, yeah, sure, here. And they sent me a couple scenes and they asked me to write lyrics to reflect what was literally happening in each scene, which sounds really kind of corny. And it's something that I wouldn't normally do. You know, it's almost like a parody in a way. But I knew the directors, I knew A24 Pictures, I loved their films, and I just knew, okay, I'm in safe hands here, and I was excited to do it. So I wrote two versions with different lyrics, Story of a Chef and Story of a Dom, which I'll leave it to you whether or not you edit that one out. And then the third one they asked me to do was like a 90s ballad version, completely different version of the song. But the best part is that one of the main characters, and the whole reason why my song is in the film to begin with, is because one of the directors wrote the script and he used two lines from Story of a Girl as dialogue. Your clothes never wear as well the next day and your hair never falls in quite the same way. And he couldn't get them out. He just, they belong in here. So he kept thinking he would get rid of them. And then he realized, well, I can't. These are integral to the scene. So they sort of doubled down and asked me to do it. And I was just thrilled. So to have it kind of part of it, won 11 Academy Awards, I think.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Amount. Yeah.
So You can't put that stuff like that into words. It's just an amazing thing to have happened.
No, it's a great story and a phenomenal movie, and amazing that you got to be a part of it. And then as this is coming out, as this movie's coming out, it seems all too coincidental to be a coincidence, but yet it seems that it is. You're getting notoriety for the film, for the TV show that's featured in. Obviously, we're excited to have you part of the May Day Music Festival on May 13th, but you also now are starting playing a lot more again mm-hmm. as a solo artist. You just did the Paramount recently. You have some other shows going on.
Yeah.
So how's your solo career been going?
It hasn't gotten going yet, but it's something I've been planning for a while, and it's not so much like it's a solo career, but it's just something that, you know, 9 days, we're all friends. We've known each other forever. And, guys are in different points in their lives. They're not able to make the same kind of commitments. And, my twin boys just started college this year. So I kind of have this new freedom that I haven't had in 18 years. So I'm like excited to get out and play and record, and I write songs all the time, so I'm super excited for this music that I've been working on with a bunch of other musicians to get out and record it and just play shows and just really just enjoy it. Just I love doing that.
No, I can't wait to hear some of this new stuff, and I really can't wait to the thousands of folks who come out to Bald Hill on May 13th have the opportunity to see you up on the main stage. You'll be playing right before the Wallflowers, Blues Traveler, and another Long Island band, Wheatus, will be joining. Have you played with any of these bands before? Any shows with these guys?
So John Popper from Blues Traveler, we're big fans, and we played a Ben and Jerry's Fest up in Vermont. And we were like, will you come out and jam with us? And he did. He came out
awesome.
And he wailed away on the harmonica on Story of a Girl. So we got to do that a couple times. I've met Jacob Dylan and the band a couple of times. I don't remember if we definitely didn't play any shows with them other than maybe festivals. And the funny thing about Wheatus is, as a fellow Long Island band, we have, in all these years, we have shared a show just one time. And it was a festival in Pennsylvania in 2000. That's the only time. So we were talking about how have we not crossed paths more often. So hopefully this will be the first of many of those opportunities with those guys.
No, we're definitely looking forward to it. And another Long Island artist I have to ask you about is Harry Chapin, because part of this show does benefit the Long Island Cares Harry Chapin Food Bank. Such an amazing humanitarian, amazing songwriter, obviously before your time. But were you ever a fan? Did he influence you at all? Or
Harry Chapin is an artist that you know, even if you don't realize you know him. Funny enough, we used to play the Bitter End in New York City all the time with Jen Chapin, his daughter. And a really good friend of mine, Paul Umbach, is a huge Harry Chapin fan. And Paul's like produced a bunch of records I've done. And he's actually helping me produce this next record I'm about to do in June. So, you know, Harry Chapin, his music and his sort of, you know, just him as a figure and what he does for, you know, for charity and food. It's just been a part of sort of the world of 9 days and my music in one way, shape, or form since the mid-90s. So, yeah, I'm very well aware of Harry Chapin and what his organization does. It's great.
No, fantastic. We are proud to partner with them and proud to support their mission and help put food on our neighbor's table. Again, Ryan McGarry, Chief of Staff for AME, filling in for President Dan Levler today. With us in the studio is John Hampson of 9 days, writer of Absolutely Story of a Girl. John, before I let you go, I would be a fool. I see your guitar is here. I'd be a fool not to ask you. Would you mind playing a little bit for us before we
I will
let you
be
go
happy
tonight?
To, yeah.
Honored. Thank you so much, John. Appreciate it.
This is the story of a girl who cried a river and drowned the whole world. And while she looks so sad in photographs, I absolutely love her when she smiles. So how many days in a year? She woke up with hope, but she only found tears. And I can be so insincere, making her promises never for real. As long as she stands there waiting, wearing the holes in the soles of her shoes. How many days disappear? When you look in the mirror, so how do you choose? Your clothes never wear as well the next day, and your hair never falls in quite the same way. You never seem to run out of things to say. This is the story of a girl who cried a river and drowned the whole world. And while she looks so sad in photographs, I absolutely love her when she smiles. So how many lovers would stay just to put up with this every day and all day? And how did we wind up this way? Watching our mouths for the words that we say. As long as we stand here waiting, wearing the clothes of the souls that we choose, how do we get there today? When we're walking too far for the price of our shoes, your clothes never wear as well the next day, and your hair never falls in quite the same way. You never seem to run out of things to say. This is the story of a girl who cried a river and drowned the whole world. And while she looks so sad and lonely there, I absolutely love her. This is the story of a girl who cried a river and drowned the whole world. And while she looks so sad in photographs, I absolutely love her when she smiles. When she smiles.